Studio or tweet me at Stage to Letter in Studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Hey there, my name is Alan Montecelio. On Friday, January 22nd at 11 a.m., you'll hear the first episode of a new show here on KBOO. It's called Pacific Underground. It's a show that'll focus on the stories of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders right here in Oregon. We'll bring you everything from narrative documentaries to audio essays to performances to interviews with writers and artists. In the end, this show is about handing the mic to Asians and Pacific Islanders from our local communities, like Christopher Rose, a poet who teaches at Portland Community College.
Birth name is Christopher Lee Rose. From what she told me recently, she wanted it to be Christopher Brugada Rose, which Brugada is her family's name. And my dad was like, no, they're American.
On this show, you'll hear Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders loud and clear on the airwaves. Tune in on Friday, January 22nd at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO.
Andy Warhol looks at screen, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Gabe Brown. Her show, Above Below, is on now at Butters Gallery through January 30th. Butters is now at 157 Northeast Grand Avenue. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Gabe.
Thank you. Good morning.
So this is a show of paintings where you're working in oil on linen over wood panel. So it's like a traditional canvas, but it's up against solid wood, so there's no give.
Right. So the substrate is hard, sort of a stiff substrate with a traditional hide glue and marble dust or whiting that helps in the absorbent ground.
And you call these abstract landscapes. Or abstract narrative landscapes. So in them, you're using shapes that could be familiar. For instance, there's a tree that looks like a kind of silicon circuit board, or there are leaves or teardrop shapes. There are kind of harlequin parallelograms. There are waves made with a kind of scratching tool, like a comb. So you combine these elements together, but you also use a horizon line, so you're thinking as a landscape artist.
Yeah, I am. I'm suggesting the landscape. I'm really interested in the idea of an alternate universe, so I think that that's what's coming out, or hopefully imbued in the work. An alternate universe, a fourth dimension, I guess you could call it. And by using the landscape as a way to create the images, or using my personal imagery, pulling that from a well to sort of imbue that into the work.
You kind of start with a blank slate and then let imagery suggest itself. Is that what you mean by a well?
Yeah, I think I'm layering the, well, what's happening is I start out first with the layering of the painting, whether it's through pigment or maybe sanding, or, you know, it can be reductive as well. And through that, sort of allowing the painting to speak to me a little bit rather than trying to control it, so that I can see formally where things might be placed, what kind of mood or story I'm trying to show, and I don't always know from the beginning what that might be. It's sort of, it evolves. So then that comes to fruition, usually towards the end, but as it's happening, sort of taking things that I am inspired by, often from nature. So, you know, like the crystal formations or the suggestion of which can create metaphor. They don't always have to be crystal formations. They can be crystal, rock, snowflake, things taken from the organic world that then I place into something, the dynamic between the man-made world, the duality that exists. So that's where maybe something more recognizable like the boat or the canoe come in, and using that to create the landscape.
As you go into the gallery, on the right-hand side, one of the first paintings is called Ends with Beginnings. Mm-hmm. It's a vertical with a sort of pinkish orange at the top, mm-hmm. and it's whitish at the bottom. And then in the middle is a big black body with it's pierced by a sort of green, looks like a fern frond. Mm-hmm. And then there's this blue sort of dagger thing coming down into the black. So you started with the pale colors as the background.
Yeah, I'm building up the surface so mm-hmm. that it sort of starts to develop layer. And through that layer, I find it creates a different kind of space that's more subtle. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't necessarily know that by seeing that painting, but it does over time, you know, it's sort of a slow burn. You see different layers of things, of images that come through that maybe were taken out, come back into the work. I mean, the title alone with that painting, Ends with Beginnings, is really talking about dualities that exist in the world that we live in. So the idea that the suggestive quality of it being perhaps a cityscape, there's a horizon line, but also this sort of subversive, underlying, beautiful, I see it. The cityscape looks a little apocalyptic, kind of, you know, but the other sort of natural elements that come in, I really like that contrast that happens where you're not really sure which way it could go. It's not predictable in that way. So that alone, those kinds of ideas I'm interested in.
So you do a lot of sanding, right? And the mm-hmm. sanding reveals like whiteness where the top of a paint blob mm-hmm. has been taken off. Mm-hmm. And then...
Yeah, and that mark making, it's a reductive... I mean, it can be. It's not always that way. But an aspect of my work is about doing it and being able to let go of what that original idea might have been in order to, you know, you let go of something to gain something else. So I'm very willing, at least I enjoy that part of painting where you apply the paint, you might let it dry or you it might be wet and it for whatever reason you decide to take it off or you surrender to it and you sand it down so that it reveals something else. And the nature of these particular paintings is such that with regard to the ground that I use, it's very absorbent. So they have this translucent kind of shimmery quality with their color. They reflect color in a different way than, say, an acrylic gesso might. It's more absorbent. It's like working with the sand or something like that.
Yeah, what is that stuff that's made of marble dust?
Yeah, it's a hide glue. So it's which when you apply it, it's heated to a certain temperature. And what it does is it's a water base and it seals the canvas, but it doesn't change its color. It just seals it. So in essence, I could, if I wanted to, paint directly on the canvas and allow that to come through. But that's not really what I'm interested in. I'm more interested in the color that gets absorbed. So what will happen is then the next layer would be a hide glue with marble dust incorporated, but it's a chemistry, so it has to be heated to a certain degree and it can't go beyond that. You can't sort of boil it because then the proteins of the hide glue, you know, it's not for everybody, but it does work for me and it works for this particular process.
Mm-hmm. So what you call the cityscape is the large black vertical images, kind of like a silhouette of a skyline.
Yeah, that background, that isolated image that's in shadow. I mean, like a silhouette, I think is a very good term.
And then, there was a gap in it and you started inserting this light blue mm-hmm. series of parallelograms that mm-hmm. I think look like, you know, the Harlequin, the kind of stretched diamonds or parallelograms, and you insert them one at a time and you built them up vertically, and when they get to the sky, the top, they turn to the left mm-hmm. and go across and change into reds. So yeah. What was that process? Do you know what you're doing as you create number one? Do you know where number 50 is going to be?
No, well, you know, it's such a good question, and I think I sometimes know. I have an idea. Maybe I even dream about it, or I'm inspired by something I see. Generally speaking, when I'm working with the painting, I'm doing a lot of looking and waiting for it to tell me what it needs. But more specifically, I'm responding to a or B that you've just described. So I might start an area and then all of a sudden it leads into something else. I stop. I'm responding to that original mark, whether it's there and it stays there or I can take it away. So that I really feel that that's what it is. It's a response to what has happened before.
Yeah. And in this case, you go around and then there's this sort of green frond type thing across the middle coming from the left. Mm-hmm. That came after?
Yes, it did. I think that was probably one of the last things I did. You know, it said, for some reason, I think that space was probably open and formally it needed something. Mm-hmm. So you start to think, well, what is it that I'm trying to say here? And how is it that I can actually, like, finish the painting? How do I do that? So what is it that is that thing? And it might not have originally been that particular abstract element. Mm-hmm. I might have tried six things or maybe six different colors of whatever that was. But over time, I decided to sort of give it the 24-hour rule and let it stay for
a
while.
What's the 24-hour rule?
Well, you just leave something alone. You know, you just leave it alone and you let it rest. And you don't try to control it. You don't take it away. And then when you're in a different frame of mind, you see if you really want to keep it or not.
So your part of your process, you said, is you work on maybe up to 40 paintings at a time.
Right.
On the ground, mm-hmm. you paint like from above rather than on an easel. And you're moving around them, adding things. You think maybe these 12 came from a year's work?
Yes, I think so.
12 completed paintings?
Yeah, I mean...
Because you make a lot and then you discard.
I discard or might start over or work reductively again, where you take everything off and mm-hmm. I'll let something rest for a while and then come back to it. I find that, again, they inform each other. So I think it's very difficult, I think, for me as an artist to just work on one thing at a time. It's frustrating enough and to not know when something's done. And so by working on 40, hoping maybe to get, you know, 10 interesting ones or something like that, that those are things that you feel are successful, I think they inform each other. And it helps me as an artist to have the work move quickly and to have them have a relationship that makes sense. And it helps me to understand that there's always another one that's going to be painted. I'm not just stuck with that, and it evolves, and I'm interested in that. And it helps me to not get so sort of entangled in just one piece. It just happens to be a great way for me to work.
Mm-hmm. There's another painting there called Above and Below, and it kind of looks like a big orange sunset on a white landscape. How long did you spend on this?
That one I had probably started maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and it's possible that I had sort of maybe sadly given up on the poor little thing and left it alone, and then all of a sudden it's sitting there, and for whatever reason I decided to start working on it again. So most of the background of that is many years of applying and taking something off and applying and taking something off. So there's this amazing surface and spatial relationship that starts to develop because it's very complex layering of paint. And then all of a sudden, poof, within, you know, then all of a sudden you've worked on something or have had it in your studio for 2 or 3 years, and then over a course of just a couple of weeks, you're able to then have the painting come to fruition, which I find really interesting because people ask me all the time, well, how long did this painting take you? And I always have to say, oh, about 48 years, you know?
A lifetime.
It's a long time, a lifetime. That's right.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Gabe Brown, a painter from New York. Her show Above Below is on through January 30th at Butters Gallery in their new location, 157 Northeast Grand Avenue, next to the vacuum cleaner store. Gabe, you've been connected with Butters for a long time, but mm-hmm. you're very New York based. Presumably now that with the internet, you can reach out to every gallery in the whole world and everyone else is doing it. So what's the filter process?
I have no idea. They must be bombarded and I have no idea how that works.
Well, what do you do?
Well, I try to spend most of my time in the studio. It's really by relationship that I work at this point. It takes a lot of time, but it is part of being an artist. You have to also be an extraordinary business person, I think.
Mm-hmm. So for this show, did you have a deadline or what was the...
Well, the deadline is the opening of the show. You're sort of working towards that. I had been working on a series of paintings and then at one point we had exchanged visuals and we just started to discuss what was going on in the work. And then I had finished off a couple of new ones, so those were able to get into the show as well. So
did you send like a finished one or did somebody see it in person?
No, they knew what they were looking at, I think, when we were sending, you know, good quality images and
So these works, when you and I walked around, you were touching the surface a lot. Is there something tactile about it? I know you've multiple layers, probably dozens, hundreds of layers on one painting.
Dozens, and some it might be three, and others it'll be 100. You know, it's there's variables there, for sure. Mm-hmm. The process I use is I'm not trying to control it, so it's not always predictable in that way.
Yeah.
And I leave it open and loose so that I have that flexibility.
Mm-hmm. But you talk about these elements as narrative mm-hmm. landscapes. Mm-hmm. Could you just explain that? So you don't mean narrative
sure.
as a story?
Well, I do, but in sort of an abstract way. I mean, I think I don't really like to dictate to anyone as to what these paintings might possibly represent for them. I can share what my concerns are as a human and as an artist, and I think that's what helps to make it universal. So the things that I'm interested in are my concerns are ideas based in, you know, not only the environment and the dualities that exist between maybe the natural world and the man-made world, but I'm really interested in, you know, the contradictions of the human condition. And by using that personal symbolism that I sort of pull from a well and place here and there and the contrasts that I'm creating and the idea of landscape, I'm very much interested in the metaphor that gets created as a result of the juxtaposition of those elements. And that human condition element is really interesting to me. So that's where that work comes from. And the alternate universe, you know, some of it is based in the reality that we are in now, but most of it's abstracted and deconstructed.
Mm-hmm. There's a painting called Slow Like Honey, which uses, on the left is a sort of, it looks like a cactus, but it's hexagonal in cross-section, the elements. Mm-hmm. So it could be like metal, it could be steel girders.
Right.
And then on the right, there's a sort of cascade of little red and orange and yellow teardrops. So they look like autumn leaves coming mm-hmm. down or water. And you said you're influenced by Indian miniatures.
Yeah, the spatial relationships especially. And that not the figurative aspects so much, but the colors and the way that space is shifted. Those court paintings, I mean, they're just extraordinary. The perspective is, some of them are off completely, and yet this natural element with the stylized animals and the beautiful leafy, wonderful little delicate leafy parts in up against a flat plane of, I mean, that's just, I find them extraordinarily beautiful. And I don't think early on in my career or making art, I appreciated them in the same way, but I kept finding that I gravitated back towards and realize now that they were a huge influence on my work in terms of the kind of spatial relationships making.
From India, the subcontinent, and what kind of era? Where would you go to look?
Well, I've started looking at them at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and just the little wing that they had there, and then I sort of followed some you know, nothing specific. I mean, I couldn't give you any of the the artists that actually had done them. And it was more the image I was interested in. And I think that was a huge influence on me in terms of what I was making. But I don't make paintings like that. It's,
right.
You know, they're clearly not that. But I think that's all right. I think that you can, as an artist, you're finding things all the time that inspire you. But it certainly doesn't mean you need to make paintings like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just strange or random that this one genre stuck with you.
Yes. And it really is over the last maybe 4 or 5 years that I've started to really understand that was something that had probably influenced me, mm-hmm. you know, and landscape in general. I just sort of traditional landscape to me, I don't know how I feel about that. I'm not quite sure. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's exactly what I'm doing, which I find very interesting.
Could that be the result of your upbringing in New York where you had access to...
Well, it could be. It could be partly that. It could be doing that and then moving to the Hudson Valley, which is where I live now, which is this beautiful landscape. And the duality of both those worlds coming together. I mean, I think that we are a product of our circumstances. So, you know, that makes perfect sense to me that's a you know, meshing those two ideas.
Mm-hmm. What's the Hudson Valley like these days?
Oh, well.
So you teach at New Paltz and you live in what town?
I live in Kingston, which is about an hour and 45 minutes outside of New York City. And I get in on occasion, so, you know, to see shows. But there's such a lively community of artists in the Hudson Valley that I love being there. I like that there's a change of seasons. I could do without all the snow, but you know, it's important. And I just love it. I love being there. I love teaching at SUNY New Paltz. And then I also travel in to teach at Fordham University, where I teach drawing, visual thinking, and basic painting. Mm-hmm. And at New Paltz, I teach anything from basic painting up to the MFA graduate painting.
And Fordham's in New York City.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So I always love hearing what the art students are up to. So what do you see? What are they using? What tools? What are they excited about?
Well, I always have to remember that it's everything you're showing them they probably haven't seen before. So everything is a new experience. And I try to focus on the idea of hands-on, using materials, whether or not you use them now, the ability to maybe bring them back into your studio practice later. I think that's really important because there's so many things I learned as a young painter that I use now that have influenced my work that I try to have them try everything. And so I think that's very exciting for them. You know, it is kind of like science, you know, recipes that we follow and learning how to do maybe traditional ways of making a ground or a substrate. I think that has been lost a little bit in art making, is actually making something really beautiful and craft the craftsmanship. And so I've tried to do that, and I think the students appreciate that. It's difficult, but it's something that I think that they ultimately really appreciate.
So what do you mean, like making a ground? And are these just techniques that go back
materials
in oil
yeah,
painting for
yeah.
like 500 years?
Yeah, materials and methods I think is really important, just to know like where things came from, you know, where, how colors, you know, they kind of like spices. I mean, they were coming and going all over, and where lapis lazuli came from and what that means in terms of a color, mm-hmm. the beautiful cobalts of the wonderful paintings. And I think it's important for them to understand where things come from.
Right.
In terms of their, you know, developing for them, I think it's important too, developing a clear understanding of the foundations and that, you know, the formal issues of painting or drawing, you know, all the fine arts is so important because you need to kind of know how to, you need to know the rules first, I think, and then in order to break them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important. So I try to teach a lot of that, even though I don't make paintings like that, mm-hmm. I teach that because I think it helped me to better understand how to put a painting together by knowing all those formal issues.
So if an 18-year-old comes to you and their idea of the palette is the millions of colors available, supposedly, on a computer, what do you do with that person?
Well, I suppose it depends on the subject matter, but I often try to have them be a little more selective. You know, there's many colors under the rainbow, but you don't have to have every word in the song. You know, it's important, I think, to understand that color has a relationship and what that does to the eye and how it's going to affect the viewer. And, you know, it's very tempting to want to put everything in there, but not everything needs to go in one painting. You're going to be making paintings for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. See what it looks like here or there, or, you know, there's something quite lovely about a chromatic gray, you know?
So your studio is, I know it sounds like it's very busy. So how do you balance that with teaching?
Well, you just get into a regiment and sometimes it's about mood. Sometimes it's about what you need to get done if you're working towards a project. I find that over time, it's taken me a while to develop what that is, but it's not always regular.
Mm-hmm. Like, is painting to you like half your work week or 90%?
I try to make it. Yeah. You know, I'm teaching 3 days, then there's other commitments with that. And then the rest of the week I'm usually in my studio or at least, you know, there's also a time where you might not be in your studio, but it's really important as an artist, I think. I'd like to, you know, forgive myself sometimes when I'm just absorbing. I think absorbing and doing research is mm-hmm. just as pertinent as actually doing the work. So that's a huge part of, you know, what I do in the studio.
What's good research for you right now?
Right now? Well, for me right now, I'm really looking at things having to do with the environment. So I'm just sort of scraping the surface with that because working with landscape and what's happening, and I feel that that's something that's starting to affect my work. So I'm looking more into that and making choices.
You mean reading or
looking
at pictures?
Reading, looking at things. I think I have a huge library of things from the natural world that I've collected that I look at that help inspire me. And so just really spending time in nature, that's huge. I look a lot at things outside of the art world to inspire me. So that's something that is very interesting to me, things from the natural world. I think that more than anything, that's probably something that affects what I do.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Gabe Brown, a painter based in New York. Her show Above Below runs at Butters Gallery through January 30th, and Butters is now at 157 Northeast Grand Avenue. Thanks very much for coming to KBOO.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Dress my friends up just for show, see them as they really are. But the people in my brain, too new pens to have a go. Like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a screen. Can't tell him apart at all. No. Andy walking out.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Nacho Drum, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill two vacancies on the Board of Directors. The Board will elect the new directors at the February board meeting.